Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The Chicago offense.
Matt Forte, Tulane University.
Touchdown Bears! A dramatic catch by Matt Forte.
Matt Forte.
Forte, 50-yard run for a touchdown.
You know, just watching Matt Forte on film, watch him here. He can make those jump cuts. I mean, he can plant that left foot and then jump way over to the right and then plant the right foot and go upfield again.
10-year NFL veteran.
Unbelievable teammate. Unbelievable friend.
I'm going to tell my kids about this guy. I'm going to tell my grandkids about this guy. He's a legend. He's somebody that should be in the same conversation with the greats. He's the best player I've ever played with.
Two-time Pro Bowl selection.
Forte picks up another first down and more. He is inside the 10 and will take it in for a Bears touchdown.
Matt Forte, 32 yards of excellence.
One of the 100 greatest Bears of all time.
You know what, guys? It's a pleasure and an honor to be a part of this team. I'm excited about this. I haven't been on a team in a long time. It's good to be back, Holmes, with you and Spiegel. You know, it's good to be back with you guys.
Underrated, but I still be scoring Matt Forte. Matt Forte with Spiegel and Holmes.
I think we're on record of how important Matt is.
On 670 The Score.
Matt Forte now joining us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Matt, how are you, man?
What's up, Holmes?
Everything is cool, man. Meet my buddy Jason Leisure, who I believe you guys were classmates at Tulane.
Everybody thinks that I know you. Everyone assumes that I know you. I don't think we've ever met, but I think I'm 1 year ahead of you in school, and we were there, or maybe two. We were there at the same time, and I cover the Bears now for the Chicago Sun-Times, and everybody thinks I know you, but I'm pretty sure we've never met.
Matt, were you in the A.B. Freeman Business School?
No. That's what I should have been doing, though.
Instead of journalism. We don't know each other. I was front row in business class at Tulane. See, at Tulane, you don't get any grades or anything like that. Even if you're an athlete, they sit you in the front row and say, "Do your work and make sure you earn your degree." So, you know, respect to Tulane, and you certainly earned your degree from there as well. That's why you're on this show and successful.
So, thank you.
It's just Tulane.
You got your. Here it is. Yes.
You thought we didn't have the Tulane fight song in the vault? We got it.
I assumed Tanny would find it.
I had to do the Tulane fight song in the cafeteria as a rookie because Olin Krutz made me stand on the chair and sing the fight song. That's probably the last time I did that. Even heard the song.
I graduated in 06, and 2005, Lawrence, was
the Katrina year.
Kind of the breakout season. I mean, Matt Forte was good the whole time, but Matt Forte was really starting to have that name recognition in 2005 when they're playing their games all over the place. The students are all over the country, and you guys are playing in like San Antonio and Dallas, maybe even.
Oh, we played all away games during Hurricane Katrina season. We were everywhere.
Even experience everywhere. Or see the Matt Forte ascent at Tulane because of that.
Yeah, because you were at a different school, right?
Everyone was at a different school except the athletes. I mean, it was either...
No, us too. Yeah, we were at Louisiana Tech in a condemned dorm.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Condemned dorm. Well, that's probably redundant. I mean, I would guess they're all condemned dorms at La Tech. But
man, look at the shades of La Tech that's going on with the Tulane guys.
You know who I was friends with from the football team was the punter. Did you play with Chris Beckman, the punter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Beck.
Yeah, we came in the same year. We were friends. And Tulane, I don't know if you've seen any of their games recently, Lawrence, the last few years when they've been pretty decent.
Good.
They have their own on-campus stadium right now that's beautiful. Back then, they played in the Superdome, and it was really not good. It's a 70,000-seat cavernous stadium, then with like 10,000 people in there. Very quiet, very cold. It's off campus.
I like to say it was intimate.
I like to say it was whatever the opposite of intimate is.
You know, it was like I get to play at home, hometown kid. I can see my mom and dad are right there. You know, it's now I have to search the crowd for them and try to find them.
Easy to find. Right. You know,
easy to find a lot of people that I went to high school with and everything. So, you know, it was an intimate setting if you look at it that way.
We should send this last 5 minutes to Tulane because we have just done a commercial for Tulane. And I appreciate that because it was actually where I was going to go to law school.
It's a great place to go for business school like Forte and Cairo Santos did, and a great place to go for law school.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But then I fell into this business.
Coach Summerall. Yeah.
And then here we are. Here we are with the Bears. And so, Matt, I got to ask you.
I had 100 more Tulane.
No, that's enough.
That's not interesting to the rest of Chicago.
No,
okay.
We have a lot of Bears questions that we need to ask Matt and get his opinion on it. So let's start with this. Looking at that game, why do you think the Lions had so much success on offense?
When I look at that game, I'd say execution was something that they possessed that we did not, as well as just discipline. I'm kind of confused as to why the Bears, the last two games or the first two games, have had so many pre-snap penalties and penalties overall. We're starting behind the ball on first and second down. And then we're creating third and longs, which are low percentage for us to make first downs. So they're drive killers, or even, you know, we don't even get a drive to start. So that's a lack of discipline and execution, which you see when we looked at the game against the Lions. They were executing on, you know, certain plays where only their playmakers can make those type of catches or runs or blocks or tackles. And it was just a vast difference of being able to take advantage of each opportunity and say, I'm going to win this matchup. And we didn't do that. So you see a methodical team that's doing that, and you see a butt whooping on the other side. And that's what happened.
Matt, when you see the Bears, we're talking about false starts and stuff like that. When you see them come out of halftime and DeAndre Swift, the running back, gets a false start, where are you starting the investigation on what went wrong there? How that happens?
I mean, it's hard to pinpoint or say I'm going to start the investigation, you know, within a certain player or even the offense. It's like I said on the previous show last week. Unfortunately, you have to keep saying this. It is a full team sport. But also things like that comes down to coaching. Like, how many times are we going to jump off sides? And obviously the players have to play the plays and have to play, and the coaches, you know, they're not they can't make someone not jump off sides, but they can reinforce the discipline aspect of this kills the game or the drive, the offensive momentum before it even starts. So these are things that we can't have. And thinking of just legendary coaches like Belichick and even Coach Lovey, when we played with him, like, that's unacceptable. Like, we can't have mistakes like that are mental. You know, someone makes a physical mistake, or you're outmanned, or you get outmatched. Someone's, just maybe that guy was just better than you on that particular play. We can live with that. But if it's a mental error where it's just you can't get this started before it even – you can't get this right before it even starts, those are things that we can't have. We're not good enough to make mistakes before the play even begins and then overcome those within, a drive or – you know, a quarter or even a half or an entire game. It's just, we can't do those things. We have to be almost play perfectly disciplined football to even be in the game.
Watching some of the down and distances for the Bears because of penalties and whatnot, they seemed like they weren't real. You see, like, oh, second and 33, third and 34. Like, those are not real downs and distances. If you're in that, like, how it, Matt, I don't even have a question. I just, like, how in the world are you supposed to bounce back from that when, if you're in the huddle and you know it's third and 34 and you know what the play call is not to the sticks, because how could it be? It must be demoralizing when you're in that position.
Yeah, I mean, it's even as a, even if you're a play caller, those aren't even real plays that you have in your playbook to set up. And you have to almost make we actually had, that's one of the things for your first question, what was the difference between them and us was their explosive plays as well. We didn't have a lot of them, or we missed them. And they had a lot of explosive plays. And what I mean by that is a run that's, you know, over 15 yards or a catch that's 20 plus. And, you know, there's just not a play call that says, hey, on second and 25, we're going to get, you know, 15, 20 yards on this play or 30 yards. So you put the play caller at a disadvantage when you do that. But then also there's, you put yourselves at a disadvantage. You know, you're kind of trying to get two plus first downs when it's hard to even get one in the NFL. So we're making things more difficult for ourselves by the penalties and, you know, just kind of being behind the chains before the game even starts.
Matt, big picture with their running backs, do you think they have what they need with the type of running back that DeAndre Swift is, and then really unknowns after him in Roschon Johnson and Kyle Manungai?
I do. I do think that they have a talented backfield that can, by committee, which I never was a fan of running back by committee just because I wanted to do it all. I wanted to be that guy.
You were.
But with these guys that they have, I think all three of them can make it happen. The difference is, you know, the same thing is as when you get pre-snap penalties. If you have defensive line penetration into the backfield before the play gets started or before the handoff, or, you know, maybe there's, you know, just not any holes to run through, that makes it a lot more difficult as well. But we haven't established a running game. I don't know what they really specifically need to do besides up front. We just need to be a lot better interior, on the interior and on the outside, honestly, as well. And, you know, it's one of the things that I was confused about even when we get to the draft. This year, you know, the first pick of the draft that we had, not the first pick, the first round of the draft, our first pick, we went tight end, and he had like one target on Sunday. And I'm confused as to why we weren't trying to just continue to reinforce and bolster up our offensive line when clearly with a young quarterback running games, having a efficient, effective running game helps the offense to run better. It helps the quarterback to have less pressure on himself. It helps where defensive coordinators can't just blitz you like they did the second half of the Monday night game against the Vikings. So these are the type of things where, yeah, it's a passing league. We cliche kind of say that as a cliche, but an effective running game really does help teams. I mean, if you look at the Eagles, they pass for like 120 yards. And they beat the Chiefs. So having an effective running game is something that's kind of a key aspect that we're missing on offense.
Everyone's thinking what you're thinking about the draft. The Bears are sitting there after the draft saying, well, we had this guy, we had certain running backs we wanted, and it just didn't work out at certain picks. But, I mean, who went into that draft thinking the top two picks they make should be tight end and wide receiver? That was really strange when you have these needs at defensive end and offensive tackle. And I would have thought a good blueprint for their draft would have been attack one of those positions, and then in the second round you go get a running back because you need one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I was looking for them to go either O-line or D-line up front, or even back-to-back offensive line and D-line. And even with running back, you can get myself, you can get Adrian Peterson, you can get Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, all of these guys. If the guys up front don't handle business, it's really going to be hard to do your job as a running back back there. So Yeah, I am as befuddled as you guys are.
Well, it's interesting because the point that Jason raises, and we're talking with Matt Forte about what's going on with the Bears, is maybe we've got guys that were drafted in the second round that aren't dressing for games.
Unsuitable to play.
Which is wild
to me. Second round picks.
And then you have, as Matt pointed out, you have your first pick in the draft not really be a part of the game plan. Now, Ben Johnson seemed to offer a window into why. Like, he's saying, hey, we got to find out who's going to play, who wants to play. I'd love to know from your experience, Matt, what's it like for young guys from college making it to the pros and understanding what a professional practice should feel like and look like? Because there's part of me that wonders if the young guys have done all the things that they need to do to prove that they're professional enough to get onto the field.
Yeah. The NFL, it looks a little different now. Like, when I first came in, there still was camp with two days, and you had those you know, legendary veterans that's on the team, and you kind of, you don't talk much. You kind of just want to prove yourself, and you really, you know, want to follow up behind the guys who are perennial Pro Bowlers and watch what they do and kind of set your course for your career that way. Today's sports entertainment NFL, where the entertainment is becoming bigger than the name of the sports, I'm not so sure guys really are thinking about practice and how to get better and how to make the transition or the jump into the NFL from college in a way that they're going to say, I'm going to be an asset to this team immediately. Sometimes guys are just, they're satisfied. It's like, I'm on the team, you know? And this isn't something new either. One of the things that has, and I want to make this clear, this is not bash the Bears, you know, show. I just want to, I speak the truth. And even since when I got there in 2008, even before, I've had teammates who have been like, yeah, man, I can't believe, you know, we drafted this guy and we drafted this one guy, you know, back in 05 or 2004 before you got here. He was a second round pick and he never played it at all. Or who is this guy that we drafted? He's a third rounder and he don't even play special teams. He's not contributing to the team. And I mean, they had some guys that, you know, you can call it complaining, but they were concerned about the recruiting process, the draft process. And it seems to be the same thing that is going on more than a decade later. So we have some issues with, and I'm going to be honest with you, Bears fan, we do have a lot of issues to address. And I think they're equally on the field as they are off the field.
The storyline with DeAndre Swift and Ben Johnson is so interesting to me because they were together in Detroit. Ben Johnson was not part of drafting DeAndre Swift and was part of them trading DeAndre Swift. Then he takes the job here, and DeAndre Swift is the best running back they have. And Johnson and Bieniemy have been saying all offseason and now into the preseason and regular season, DeAndre Swift is running much more north and south. He's hitting the holes harder. DeAndre Swift, every time you ask him, says, I'm doing nothing different. I'm doing exactly what I've always done. So, Matt, when you watch DeAndre Swift, what is your comparison of DeAndre Swift 2025 versus DeAndre Swift 2024?
Yeah, no, I think he's being a bit, I don't know if it's modest or pride, but saying that you're doing nothing different, maybe from his perspective, that is. But I would say, yes, he is running more efficient. I think that comes from Coach Eric Bieniemy. And, I mean, look at the guys that he's coached with, Adrian Peterson, and has coached running backs with the Chiefs and successful teams. And that's what kind of runners that they had, with guys that were very decisive in runs. They weren't trying to bounce the ball all the time or take chances where, you know, it's like, okay, the play is blocked for this particular, you know, run. I'm not going to try to, you know, fake a guy out where maybe I run through him and get some extra yards. So I definitely see that it's way more concise, and decision making is way more straightforward, where it's north and south, than the year before. Because he definitely was. I think it seemed like when he first got here, he was trying to make plays happen. Whereas, like, I'm gonna try to press and make things happen. But sometimes you got to let the game come to you, and you just keep hammering away until it pops in the running game for you. So, I do see a difference in that. He's definitely not trying to run east west as much as he used to.
You brought up Eric B. Are we talking about Eric Bieniemy? I have a question for you. So, there's all these different approaches to coaching, and I think of this as like parenting too, where I have two daughters, and I can walk into both of their rooms, messy rooms, you guarantee it. I walk into Grace's room and I say, "Hey, this looks ridiculous. Get this right." And she does. I walk into Anna's room and I have to say, "Sweetie, honey, hi. Hey, this isn't really how we want our room to look. It'd be great if you would tidy up." And they'll both do it. I got to take a different approach with each one. Eric Bieniemy is more that first approach. Which approach did you respond to best as a player, Matt?
Yeah, I'm not a guy who needs to be yelled at or cursed at, or, you know, you got to jump down my throat or whatever. I'm a guy that you can talk straightforward to me. It's you know, we can be accountable in that way. And the film doesn't lie. The film hurts worse than any words than a coach could tell you. You know, you make a mistake, it's boom, it's blown up, it's right there, it's on film. And the eye in the sky don't lie. So I was the type of guy, you know, I'm a grown man, you know, we're in the NFL, so talk to me like a grown man.
Matt, as always, man, we appreciate you. Thanks for stopping by the show. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Thank y'all.
Roll wave.
Roll wave.
See? Come in here and you get yourself a little Tulane reunion. That some of that stuff that Matt was talking about there, man. Like it. Bring it back.
Yeah. He was great.
Did you notice that it's a similar take as Olin's too about film? Like, I don't need to hear what you say, because with the pros, like, they can watch the film. And that should hurt more than anything that any coach right. says to you. That's amazing analysis by Matt Forte. We'll talk with Matt Bowen coming up at 4. The two of us need to talk some Bears. We haven't really had a chance in today's show to talk about some things. So let's talk about the quarterback. Let's talk about Caleb and incremental improvement and results. We'll do that next here on Tulane Radio. The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Lawrence, everything's fine. Matt, everything's fine. Tanny, everything's fine.
Afternoons on The Score.
Dynamic. What's the dynamic been between you and Ben the last 2 weeks, where there's some tough film to watch? He's also been very supportive of you publicly. What's the balance there in terms of tough, accountability and support?
Tough film to watch. Yeah, there's always accountability with us and Ben. It's always you know, point a finger at yourself before you go point at anybody else. But I'm not necessarily going to say tough film or anything like that.
I'm a little confused on why you can't say it was tough film to watch. It wasn't like, and I thought that in the first half of the first game, Caleb played all right. And most of the game that he played against the Lions was okay. But to not acknowledge that there were some bad misses and stuff, I thought that was a weird... His reaction didn't make sense for the question that was asked by one Jason Leisure, who is sitting in for Matt Spiegel today.
I was fine with his response, though. He gets his opinion. I mean, I have mine, he has his. I'm straightforward about what I ask, and he gets... That guy... to his credit, engaged. I have never seen him turn down a question, either overtly or by dodging it with his, like, he takes it on. And if he disagrees with that, that is totally fine. That's not the first Bears quarterback where that I've disagreed with about how things were going.
I just think that if he's not seeing that things are not going great, that's a problem in itself. Like, things are not great. Like, they can be a little bit, and I, again, I thought that he was not one of the real problems from Sunday's game.
Oh, they gave up 52 points.
Correct.
Who's winning that game ever? And when I write a column coming out of that game that's about Caleb Williams, I think it would be understandable for somebody to look at that, especially because it's critical. It's saying this isn't good enough. To look at that and say, oh, well, hold on. Where are you mentioning that the defense gave up 52 here? We have multiple people covering games. We have me and Patrick and Steve Greenberg, and nobody is writing in 2025 just a summary of what happened. That's not needed anymore. Everyone saw the game or looked it up online or heard it on the radio or whatever. That's not what your job as a writer is to do, is just recap what happened. You need to pick an element of the game and opine on it or analyze it or whatever. And trust me, we had coverage of how bad the defense was giving up 52 points. I think what you said is correct, that this is not going well right now. That does not mean that it can't eventually go well. Those are different things. And I was saying this in August when Caleb had a pretty bad training camp overall, not promising, and by Ben Johnson's own admissions. And in the final preseason game, pretty ugly. And it is very hard to go from that type of practice to games that are going to look drastically different. That's a pretty big leap. And Ben Johnson has said that. He said, I want this guy to complete 70% of his passes this season. And by the way, it's going to be hard to do that unless he's doing it in practice. So I'm expecting him to complete 70% in practice too. It isn't going well right now. That doesn't mean it's not going to go well at some point. I want to get this out in front of before we have what's going to be a critical conversation about Caleb Williams. And I will still say this, even at 0-2 for the Bears, there is no greater source of improvement for any team in football than to have the potential of a young quarterback clicking at some point. And when that takes off, the team can take off like a rocket. But that's just potential right now. That hasn't happened yet.
It's a strange place for any Bears fan to be in, watching this play out. My feeling on it, and people who listen to Spiegel and Holmes every day, thank you, first of all. Also, you can watch the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago673. We're on there right now. You can say hello. You can be inside the chat if you want. But I've been saying, I don't expect this to look very different until we get probably halfway through the season. I'm trying to give every opportunity for this to work with the knowledge of covering the league for 20 years and seeing that it doesn't always just click. Like, the Jaden Daniels thing is a bit of an anomaly. And the C.J. Stroud thing is an anomaly. And notice that C.J. Stroud, since the beginning of last year, it's been a reversion.
He's come back to earth.
100% he has. So it's rare to see the level of success. I get bolstered by watching in that same game last night, looking at what Baker Mayfield has become and seeing that he's now, 3.5 touchdowns for every interception that he's thrown. He's thrown the most touchdowns over the last three seasons of any quarterback in the league. And that's a guy who was this close to being gone, mm-hmm. to being out of the league as a one of one. So for me, I am willing to put in the time that it takes and what it usually takes for a quarterback to mature. I think that in a big picture quarterback conversation, part of the problem is the quarterback clock, the contract clock. And I think that it causes people to make rash and often terrible decisions about what their quarterback is or isn't. Specifically with Caleb, if you're a Bears fan and you're going, and I think this texter says it really well. Yeah, he wasn't the problem Sunday, but I'd like to get to a place where he's the solution. it's going to be hard to be the solution over giving up 52 points. Even Jared Goff couldn't do that last year in the playoff game against Washington. But how does this look to you? And is it fair of the Bears to be like, it might take a while for this marriage that we're talking about to actually bear fruit?
Yeah, it is fair. And when you said midseason, that's what I think too. I think around midseason, this should be clicking. However, I think it should look better than this in the meantime.
Okay.
I think there should be like clear progress in terms of results in the meantime. You can't have him at 136 yards passing, for example, Sunday at the before garbage time. I mean, that it has to be better than that. You can't have, what did he go, 8 for 21, I think, after that good start against the Vikings. And you have plays against, you have plays in the opener, for example, where it really looked like to me, and then Caleb basically confirmed this in the way he was describing it afterward, that everything worked. These play calls were great. The route running was great. Everything was great and precise until the point where the ball leaves his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes wrong. That's not knowing the offense. That is that's a major issue that he's got to fix and hasn't had an answer for over the past year and a half with his accuracy. If you skip to game two now, that interception, and I know it's second and 32, and we just talked with Matt Nagy, you say to the effect of, I don't have a play call for second and 32 because that just should never happen, and there is no play call that could solve that problem for the most part. That interception is inexcusable. That is a rookie-type mistake that has nothing to do with whether you know Ben Johnson's offense or not. Caleb Williams has to fix some of these things that are fundamental mm-hmm. and basic and don't have anything to do with the acclimation to a new play caller.
What I've been saying to Spiegs is I have an issue with him not being able to throw the ball to the guy. And I know that sounds really, really simple, but it's a problem for me.
You'd rather him miss a read. You'd rather him not see something mm-hmm. than he see it works. The guy's in the right place at the right time. Caleb sees it, and the throw is in the stands.
Because ordinarily, when we're talking about NFL accuracy, we're talking about a ball being barely behind a guy versus a ball being on his hands that he can catch it in stride. That's what we're talking about with NFL accuracy. What I'm watching is a guy that's struggling to see and throw it.
You're watching Pac-12 accuracy.
Yeah.
And you can get away with a lot in college.
Yeah.
Even the worst NFL corners won't let you get away with that.
And that's what scares me a little bit. It scares me that there are still some of those plays. But then he wows you with a throw that you go, oh, my God. Like, there's two or three different, maybe two or three quarterbacks that can make that throw.
Yeah.
But I don't need him to make that throw. I need him to make the throw to a streaking DJ Moore. I need him to make the throw where Rome is wide open and not miss him by 5 yards. Even if you get the completion and it isn't a touchdown or a guy running to the end zone, get that completion. And you're right. There hasn't been an answer for why that's still a thing.
Ben Johnson has an answer.
With his footwork.
And his feet are not aligned. And by the way, somebody brought that up last year.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Eberflus said he. I think this was kind of a subtle message to Caleb at the time. Matt Eberflus said quarterbacks love to have these off-platform throws, but they really need to have their feet square to deliver those with accuracy.
I'll tell you, someone, you could watch it play out in real time. It's happening in college football right now. It's happening with Arch Manning. Arch Manning is trying to make these like weird arm angle off platform throws. And I'm like, with your two uncles, how did you end up here? Mm-hmm. How did you end up in the Philip Rivers zone of throwing the football? Step and throw, young man, because you've got the arm talent for sure. It's a weird thing. We'll keep talking about that, but we need to take a timeout. We also need to talk about this weird thing that's going on with Tom Brady. And on this show, we have been speaking about how this is nonsense.
It is wildly inappropriate.
That is correct, and we'll discuss why next here on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
To the sidelines of Peter Schrager. Peter.
Chris, we've got a special member of the Raiders ownership group here today, and that's Tom Brady, who is in the house and is with the coaches box tonight. I was wondering how much Brady really had an involvement with this team. We hear so much about Brady as the owner. Chip Kelly told us that he talks to Brady 2 to 3 times a week. They go through film, they go through the game plan, and Brady is a luxury for the coaches. Who else has an owner who's actually been there and done that?
5% stake.
That's an amazing sight right there.
Now Chip Kelly uses them as a resource every single week.
Yep, why wouldn't you?
I gotta say, owners of football teams have been really interesting over the last couple of weeks. You've got Tom Brady in the booth, in the coach's booth, with Chip Kelly working on things. You've got Carly Ursay Gordon on the sideline with a headset on. With Brady, though, the conflict of him being a Fox broadcaster, and he's going to be calling the Bears game this week.
This is very relevant to the Bears right now.
Yeah, he's going to be calling Bears-Cowboys this week. It's a 3:25 game on Fox. And then, of course, the week after, the Bears play the Raiders, the team that Tom Brady owns 5% of.
So Tom will get special access to the Bears, limited compared to his coworkers.
Yes,
somewhat.
but they relaxed some of the rules. Yeah. So now he can do some of that stuff that he couldn't do last year.
He can do it virtually, the production meeting. He'll have access to the Bears this week leading up to this game. And then, let's just say it, man. Let's stop dancing around it like the NFL does. Coaching against them the next week.
Correct.
That is what he's doing. You can put all these qualifiers on it of however you want of, oh, he's just, you know, consulting, or he's just his buds with Chip Kelly, or they just talk occasionally. He is literally coaching against a team that he is going to have special access to this week. And the NFL, the best part is, like, the most messed up part is the NFL endorsing this.
I would have thought that there would have been some sort of pushback from other owners.
You would think so, but...
And there hasn't been, and it's wild to... Like, more owners, including the Bears, are more concerned with the tush push than Tom Brady being able to walk virtually into their building, talk with their players, and scout them.
Second time, by the way, that the Bears have been wrapped up in this Tom Brady conflict of interest situation, because the other one was when both teams were in a coaching search in January, and Tom Brady's calling a Lions playoff game and getting to talk to Ben Johnson while recruiting him to be their head coach. I mean, all in the name for Tom Brady, I would do this too, to protect a 10-year, $375 million contract. I would want that too. I'm all for that. I think the squirreliest part of this, it's a good word, is the NFL, as this clip circulates of him on social media in the coaching box, which that we hadn't seen before. We all kind of assumed it was something like that was happening. Now we know it because it's on film. The NFL tweets out the video and says something to the effect of Tom Brady and Chip Kelly working together on the offense, clapping hands emoji, as if to say, this is all kind of cool. We're all good with this, right?
Don't you love this?
And then... hold on. It turns out not everyone's cool with it. In fact, most of us are not cool with it. Then the NFL deletes the tweet.
That's why I thought there would be more people voicing displeasure with the idea of, hey, man, that I'm not letting that guy into my building. I'm virtually or otherwise, I'm not letting him in. We know that I don't imagine that Caleb will tell him too many things, but we know that he has access to Caleb, that they're friends. And if you're Caleb, of course you want to be friends with Tom Brady. But you also have to understand that Tom Brady has got some sociopath to him where he wants to win. And he will do, he has proven time and time again, he will do whatever it takes to try to give himself an edge or an advantage. And knowing that this is a guy that had to face discipline from the league for doing twice, for doing this type of stuff in two different places.
Deflategate and with the Dolphins.
No, with Tampa. When, because he was holding practices during COVID.
Oh, well, there was also, then there's a third situation with the Dolphins where him and Sean Payton all got wrapped up in that and the Dolphins lost a draft
pick. So three times that the league has had to be like, hey, what's going on here? And yet here he, it's a bizarre thing. It's a really bizarre thing. Look, you wanted to make one more point about Caleb before we break and talk with Matt Bowen. So I want to give you space to do that.
Well, when we were talking about Caleb's footwork being the key to his throwing accuracy, which Ben Johnson has said and Matt Eberflus mentioned one time publicly last year, whether that coaching staff didn't hold him accountable and teach him the right way or whether he didn't listen to what they were saying in 2024 is kind of irrelevant. Either way, it didn't take. And Ben Johnson has had to take on this project of rewiring him from the ground up. Now, Caleb's very smart and very talented, so there's a lot to work with there. He's not some raw project in that way. But Ben Johnson has said there is basically no carryover from how he was coached last year to how he's being coached now. It is pretty much start from scratch. And Ben Johnson said in his opening press conference when the Bears hired him that Caleb was a big enticement for him to take this job because he thought, he said this flat out, that he thought there was a really good opportunity with this quarterback. There is no doubt in my mind this has turned out to be more work to be done with Caleb than Ben Johnson envisioned at that time, looking at the film and assuming the talent's off the charts. The coaching staff is the opposite of that, that all got fired. Wait till I get my hands on this. I think it's turned out to be much more work than he expected. It's probably turned out to be more work than Caleb expected, having this rewiring from the bottom up.
Yeah, it is a lot more work, I think, than he expected. And it's not, I wonder how he feels about it too. Like, I'm curious about that. What does the tape say about what the Bears did? Our guy Matt Bowen breaks it down for you next here on The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.